back to the TV Talk Machine. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hello, Jason.
We're back for another excellent episode where we sound very much like we did last week, but it's a totally a week later.
It's totally different. It's a time and space dimensions.
Yeah, it's amazing how we can do this. Sometimes again, I'm taken back to the Chronicle when you guys used to do two episodes a week. Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Brutal.
Very rapidly switched from two episodes a week to one episode every 4 months.
Yeah. You know what? You fly too high, man. You just burn out.
Right.
Too close to the sun.
The wings melted, and then you're just rolling around on the ground covered in wax.
Yeah.
It's no good. We need to talk about Watchmen. Watchmen is coming out, Sunday? I think? October 20th?
October 20th. It's going to be a huge, huge event. So a couple of things about Watchmen, which I found as I was watching the last week when I was watching these shows.
So you're the answer. You're who watches The Watchmen.
Yes.
I'm going to just keep doing
who
that.
Who watches The Watchmen?
It's TV critics. That's who.
That's it. So the problem, it's not a problem, but here's the thing. I think because it was Damon Lindelof, and he's coming, obviously Lost and The Leftovers, he has a storytelling history that would fit the genre. He's already been on record as saying that everything he's been doing has been influenced by The Watchmen. He considers it like a masterpiece of pop culture. But I think there was, especially when you start seeing these trailers that HBO put up, that you didn't have to have previous knowledge of the franchise. Like,
right.
you didn't have to have read, I believe there were 12 comic.
It was 12 issues back in the, so my history with Watchmen is that, like David Lindelof probably is, I was a kid and I read those comics. I read them as they came out. They later became famous and bound as a single graphic novel, basically, but it was 12 comic book issues put out by DC in the mid 80s. And I actually own not only those issues, I own like a trade paperback, I own a hardcover, I own the big ultimate Watchmen collection that's at full size with the art, which is an enormous book. I probably bought more copies of Watchmen than anything ever. So it was super influential, that 12 issue miniseries in the 80s, and it has been a movie, and all of comic book the comic book industry changed because of it, really, in some kind of not getting the point bad ways, actually, for a long time. Mm. But it's super influential and great, but also, I would say, a commentary about comic books and superheroes in a way that means that adapting it is hard because it's kind of commenting on a genre. And if you take it out of that, or a medium, if you take it out of that medium, what are you left with? Which is one of the problems, I think, with the feature that they did. But what's interesting is that this adaptation on HBO, my understanding is, it's not an adaptation of Watchmen and the story. It's more like, okay, remember Watchmen? Well, later this happened.
Right. And I think that there's a flaw in that logic. And here's why. Because I believed that, too. I hadn't read the graphic novels. I had seen Zack Snyder's movie in 2009.
Well, it was a slavish adaptation, basically. So you saw most of what was you saw what you needed to see.
Yeah, okay. But again, it's like when we talked last week about forgetting part of Mr. Robot. I forgot some of that stuff, and I think
that was totally last week too. Good,
right.
Good memory.
See, I'm so smart. I think that what's going to happen, Jason, is that there's going to be two conversations. There's going to be people like you who know everything about Watchmen, and then you're going to say, okay, what did this add? What did Lindelof do to make this different? Did it work? Blah blah blah. And then you're gonna have all the details that you can like obsess over. And then I think there's gonna be people who, because lots of television, no one comes with the IP, the original idea. They didn't read the book or they hadn't seen something.
For sure.
So they come to it, and it has to stand on its own as a series. Okay. So if you take it from that perspective, which I think that's how HBO. Is selling it. It's because they want to sell it, for lack of a better word, broadly. I know that they're not a broadcast network. They want to sell it broadly, get as big an audience as possible. I just don't think you can watch this without with a history. I think you at least in my initial review, I did one for print and one for online. which so I could be longer. The print one was like 800 words. It's impossible to even say anything about Watchmen in 800 words. But the point I was making in there is, like, at the very least, people need to go to like the Wikipedia page and just binge it. You know, just read all the way through it. Get yourself, you know, like at least brushed up, because I really do think that it was sold to viewers as, oh yeah, you know, the original is canon. We're not messing with that. This is a different thing. It's 30 years later. That tells, I think, the consumer that you can come in, you have an entryway to this. And I'm here to tell you that you actually don't. It's fantastic when you watch it, but it's a WTF moment constantly. Hmm. And you're like, huh, wait, so that's a reference to what? And who are they talking about? And who are those the same characters? And like, what in what concept are we in? So Lindelof himself, just to put this in perspective, is doing something very different and very odd. But the you know, there's certainly oddness to Watchmen, the original. And if you don't pick up in any of that, you don't kind of know which way is up or which way is down. That doesn't take away the like visual panache and the audacious storytelling that's in there. And that's in there. It just makes it more confusing. So I watched 6 of the 9 episodes that it's going to do. And I would tell you that I'm all in. I think it's really, really interesting, but there is a part of me that says, oh, I can't believe they only have 3 episodes left. They're going to have to stick some kind of landing.
Hmm. So I wanted to ask you, mm-hmm. how much of the, is that a reference to something, is kind of, it gets in your head because you know that there was all this predated, you know, this previous material, and you're like, oh, you know, this must be a reference to something. How much of it is that versus like, I guess I'm wondering, if you didn't know that this was based on anything, would you just let that stuff slide by? Or is it really like, wait a second, like, am I supposed to know that? Because I think that's the trick with something like this, is even if you make it for a general public who hasn't seen it, you're going to make those nods. And if the nods are too obvious, then the general public is going to be like, what are you nodding about?
Right, right.
So is it that?
I think you need to have history because, for example... and no spoilers, because these are not plot spoilers, but in the structure at the beginning, because we already know this. So basically what Lindelof is doing, he says he was kind of crippled by trying to redo the original, and the movie already did that, you said, slavishly. So he was like, I love this thing so much, I can't even get close to it. And then the more he thought about it, he's like, okay, what could I do? And he's like, okay, what would, you know, it was very, he said, it's very much of the 80s, the mid to late 80s. It ends in, I think, beginning of 86. And he's like, what happened 30 years ago to all of these people? Or what would the world look like, the Watchmen world, 30 years later? So he sets it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it very much starts out as like, kind of a metaphor on race, and he kind of got called out at this from Eric Deggans and some of the African American critics who were like, hey, wait, you're doing this thing where you're kind of flipping the script here, where the cops are the good guys, and you know, but that's really not how it is for, you know, people of color in this country. Sometimes the police force are the enemies, but you're trying to put them as the oppressed. Lindelof's answer was like, yes, that is the elephant in the room. I'm glad you asked that question. And, you know, hopefully you would understand, given all my previous work and where I stand politically, that that's not something I would do. So you need to wait and watch the whole thing, and then it'll all make sense. So I'm trusting in Lindelof. But so you set up this idea where there's kind of like, there's been like this race war in Tulsa, and that these roots of racism have extended into 2019, which the current one is set. And so basically the latter day version of the modern day version of the Klan are using Rorschach masks.
Right.
So there's that. And then the cops are using masks as well, because, you know, this is part of the story. It's not a spoiler. They were most of the Tulsa cops were slaughtered 3 years prior when, you know, the racists found out their identities and attacked them. So now they're all the cops are using masks to conceal their identities and so that they can bring police and justice and the force back to Oklahoma. So that's kind of where it starts out. And that part I understand. I'm like, okay, I would love to hear your take on what you think about that. And I'm like, okay, now where is it going to go from here and how is it going to hold up? But where it got confusing for me, Jason, was this amazing world where there is no internet and there are no, you know, there are no cell phones. And, you know, there's none of that exists. Robert Redford is president.
Right.
Right. That some of those are certainly ties back to Nixon was president.
That's a reference to the there's a newspaper that says RR to run for president. And everybody who's reading it in 1986 thinks that this is going to be Ronald Reagan. And then it's revealed in a later bit of dialogue that it's Robert Redford instead.
Right. Yep. And so those things are there. There's the whole thing where, you know, that's true to the original where Dr. Manhattan basically helped us win the Vietnam War. Watergate never happened. Nixon served in the office until the 80s. That kind of world still exists, and that's the canon. And I think even a lot of people with just maybe a passing reference to comics will kind of know the Dr. Manhattan character.
Right.
Here's where kind of threw me a little bit. There are, and you call them winks and stuff, at least in this telling, you have this narrative that's jumping back and forth from 1921 Tulsa to 2019, and you're having these characters, and it's all dealing with race. And about 15 minutes left in the first episode, they cut away to Jeremy Irons as Adrian
Veidt. Yes,
Ozymandias.
This is a character from the comic, yep.
Yeah, and so if you don't know who Adrian Veidt is, and you don't know that he's also known as Ozymandias, that's kind of a struggle. Now, especially because they kind of conceal the Ozymandias element to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're thinking, okay, who is this Adrian Veidt character? Now, if you don't know from the thing, you just don't know.
Yeah, that's a huge imbalance in the audience, right? Where the people who know the source material know his entire backstory and where he fits in this story, and everybody else has no idea who he is.
Exactly. And so I'm okay with that part. I was like, okay, I was, because everything was so weird up to that point, it was crazy. And then not as crazy it was would eventually get, because, you know, they have the whole squids and the landing in Manhattan, crazy stuff. And I was like, okay. But when you first are introduced to Adrian Veidt, the thing that struck me with the tone is that 45 minutes of the new Watchmen has gone by. Regina King, Don Johnson, Tim Blake Nelson. It's really fantastic. And, you know, then it switches to this completely other tone of the Jeremy Irons character. And I'm like, okay, who is this? And what is happening here? Later, I think that it gets to be more what you were talking about earlier, like wink, wink, when you would be references to like Dr. Manhattan, Silk Spectre, Rorschach. There's a little bit of that. There was nothing about Night. Oh, there was actually a reference to Night Owl. It's very sort of kind of concealed. That to me more is like we're winking at you super fans of the original.
Sure.
But Adrian Veidt is right in the middle of it.
So yeah, this is the challenge. I admire Lindelof for doing this, because this is not something I would ever have predicted as a HBO series or as an adaptation of Watchmen. To say we're going to tell a follow-on story that is contemporary in the world from that movie, but a totally different story that we want to tell with some of the characters and all that. But boy, the degree of difficulty here is huge. To be fair, though, I will say. Watching Westworld, there were a lot of baffling things in that. And I was just baffled. And, you know, all of us were baffled because nobody knew, there was no source material. So I could forgive a lot if it ends up being, you know, a journey that's worth it. So that's my question after six episodes is it worth it? Even with the kind of weird issues with having a canon that you can quote, but not everybody's going to get.
Well, yes, but here's why, and this is why I said I think people can kind of just if they just do a little bit of like research,
like read the Wikipedia page,
or at least just update yourself, because it's hard to remember these things. And like I kind of that, you know, when they were dropping the Ozymandias backstory, I got that, you know, I get that the superheroes have been banned, that kind of thing, and he's probably banned, but I didn't get the Adrian Veidt connection to the two of them, but I went with it, and everything else was kind of making sense. I remember thinking back, though, and I think this is what people will say, Phil, I remember thinking back, and I was like, I don't remember the movie that Rorschach was a racist, right?
He writes his diary. I think you could interpret the character that way. He writes his diary to a far right wing newspaper,
I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, there's some, I think in his diary entries or his letters, there are some racist things in there, having read it a million times. I mean, yeah, he's not a good guy. He's a very bad guy. And yes, there is a, you know, he's complaining about, well, in these decadent times in the 80s, you know, there's prostitution and there's, you know, the races are mixing and all of these things, and it's not like it used to be. I think it's more implied, but it would not be a misinterpretation of the character to view him that way. He's one of these kind of characters that gets misinterpreted as heroic in a way he is not.
Okay, so look, Rorschach's not in it, so that, at least not the first six.
He gets exploded into a pink blob at the end of Watchmen, so okay, he's gone.
So he's not in it. His importance was not lost on me. The Dr. Manhattan part, I was already familiar with Dr. Manhattan, so I kind of got what they were doing there.
Right, he's the big blue guy who's basically Superman or God, one of those.
Yes, exactly. Right, yeah. And so I was like, I get that. The parts that that completely slipped my knowledge, of course, were the Adrian Veidt, Night Owl, you know, Silk Spectre. Didn't understand any of that stuff. There is, and I know that that there's like different versions of same characters.
Yeah.
Right, there's like a Night Owl 2, there's a Silk Spectre 2.
Right, because the original is a story that also flashes back to like the 40s and 50s. I mean, really, and where there were like old-timey heroes. That's part of what Alan Moore is doing and commenting on, like old superheroes versus current superheroes and all of that's in the book, that is part of it too. I should also say, for people who've seen the Zack Snyder movie, the ending is different, and it sounds like if you're talking about the squid exploding in New York City, that's the end from the book, not the end from the movie. They changed the ending. It's very faithful up to then, but then they made a change. But you know, so there's a lot
and that's
there.
Not the yeah and that's
go
and the
buy
squid
the
is,
comic if you want
yeah.
I guess,
and the squid is not the end of the of Watchmen either. There's the three episodes to go, but here's where I think that there's where it's problematic to pull it off, because you know, I was like, at some point I was like, I really got to get better prepared on this. I wanted to have it wash over me, so I let like the first three or four episodes wash over me, and after four I was like, okay, pause, let me go refresh myself. And then you know, and it turns out the next episode, number five, which is a great episode, that kind of explains some more of the backstory, and I'm like, oh, okay, I get this a little bit more. But this is not a spoiler, I'm not even going to say who this is, but there's a character that is introduced that I don't know if she was in the original.
Huh.
And I think she's a new creation. And I think then you have kind of a problematic part as well. It's like, and she hasn't got a lot of story in the first six, and you're like, okay, who's this person? I see, what's the connection? And I feel like this is all new Lindelof territory. And so sometimes when you're mixing the two, it's difficult. And let me just close out on this because I know we've spent some time on this. I think that they're going to have to, the two things, going back to where there's two different characters, that was problematic for me too, because in the sixth episode, they have this character from the 40s.
Right.
Maybe it's the 50s. And they show what his costume is. And they show him why he has that costume and why he's using it. And then they have the updated version of someone using that costume in 2019.
Uh-huh.
And then also they flash back into the 50s or 60s as well. And there was another person.
Uh-huh.
And the modern interpretation of the people wearing the costume is completely different than the original costume. And so then you start to think, oh, I don't get it. Like, you know, that's where I was like, I would get it if, like, you know, Silk Spectre 2 or whoever 2 was fighting the same fight as the first version, but they're not in this character that I won't name, because I don't know if it was made up entirely by Lindelof or not. And then the last thing I will say is that about a week ago, now it's probably two more weeks, so people probably have already figured this out. Lindelof said at the New York Comic Con, he said, look, this is a closed-ended story. And that took a lot of people by surprise. And it made decent-sized news because it was like, wait, what? No one said that to us. That's certainly not at press tour. And it just didn't come out. And now he's saying, yeah, these nine are it. This is a closed-ended story.
Huh.
It can go on. I may or may not be involved if it goes on. But we wanted it to end so that everybody could get a closure and there wouldn't be a cliffhanger. And if the reception is really well, we have built in some ability to move the story forward into future seasons. And I thought, oh, that is, from just from a construction standpoint of how you build a TV series, that is really interesting.
Because
There's so much money into this show. And he even said, look, we did all the heavy lifting, which was trying to jam these two different stories together. And I feel like, he said, I feel like we could go on, but I want there to be closure. And that brings up the question of, will major characters die at the end of the current season? Which we didn't get to see the last three episodes, so I don't know.
I love that, though. I love telling a story. I think, you know, more shows should do that, of this is this season, and we're going to tell a story, and we can come back with another story later, but we're not going to end it on a cliffhanger and all that. I think there's something to be said for that. And, you know,
he did that in Leftovers, too. So let's be clear that, and it still felt of the same world, and it was still many of the same characters. So, yeah.
Right. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I will be there, obviously, because I'm a sucker and I have everything that is Watchmen. So I will check it out.
Good.
And I'll report back. How about
all
that?
Right.
We'll do it. We'll do a little comic book nerd Watchmen right. report.
Okay.
Next time.
Jason watches TV.
Yeah. Okay. Let me tell you. I watched two network TV shows, Tim. Two network hour-long TV shows. I can't remember the last time I watched. Was it CSI Cyber? I don't know. I don't know the last time I watched hour-long TV shows.
Yeah, that did not
go
well for you when you did.
I picked my spots. I picked two shows that I thought I might like, and I did like them. Now, whether I will watch more of them, I don't know. Like, there's so much out there, but I watched Evil.
I thought you were going to say that.
Mm-hmm. With Katja Herbers and Mike Coulter. Mm-hmm. Which is, that's a good pair of actors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done by Robert Michelle King, who did The Good Wife. And I've only seen the pilot. And you know what? I liked it. It made me laugh at several points. I like that it's kind of a reverse X-Files, which is kind of, or like an X-Files about supernatural beings instead of aliens, maybe is another way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that the show, at least in the pilot, is withholding on the idea that, yes, demons are real. It walks a line of, like, are they? Aren't they? Like, the skepticism of Katja Herper's versus the kind of belief of Mike Coulter, who may believe but may not believe and is like open. He's like, that's cool. You don't need to believe. We just need to investigate. There are some great supporting performances. Asaf Manvi is in it. Kurt Fuller is in it. And Michael Emerson, I love in basically everything.
Anything, yeah. He's
and,
really good,
and
yeah.
He is super weird and evil. So, I will probably watch more, and I hope it, from the pilot. A good pilot doesn't mean the show will be good, but I was encouraged. It is a weirder choice for CBS, but I can sort of see it being in the CBS ballpark of one of, like, speaking of Michael Emerson, like Person of Interest or something like that, or of they do like What God Friended Me, and like it touches on some of their areas of subject matter, and it's sort of a procedural, but a very, very weird procedural. But I think they put their trust in the Kings, and the casting is great, and it looks great, and it was a lot of fun. And Lauren asked me, is this going to be like scary? And I'm like, well, it's CBS, like how scary could it be? It's CBS. It's like,
right,
there's
exactly
the guarantee there's not going to be a lot because it's on broadcast TV, but I kind of liked it. So that's evil.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it. I was surprised that I was like, okay, this is a network show, all right. It's actually pretty good. But again, just the pilot. And likewise, I saw the pilot of Stumptown on ABC.
Uh-huh.
Again, you get your good cast. You got Kobe Smulders and Jake Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. I'm a little concerned about where they're going to go beyond the pilot. And having only seen the pilot, I can't say. But I think the world needs as many attempts to replicate the Rockford Files as possible.
Yeah.
So Portland is great, even though, as you said, I think a couple episodes ago, it's fake Portland.
Yeah. That's problematic.
It's fake Portland. They did some location stuff, but it's not Vancouver or it's LA.
It's going to be LA. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the pilot was, anyway, it's fake Portland, but that said, nice cast. And I like the idea of the kind of like detective screw up who is schlubby and their life isn't together and they got to solve crimes. And I like, there is something to be said for that as a genre. And, you know, I did like, I grew up on those shows with Rockford and Magnum PI is kind of like that too, where it's kind of like your main character is kind of a screw up and gets into lots of trouble. And Colby Smulders gets to be that, which is also fun. So I'm encouraged by that. I'm not maybe as sure that they can pull it off as something like Evil, which is strange to say because Evil is such a weird idea for a show. But I don't know. I was happy to see that show exists because it is interesting, and I don't expect that from network TV. So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a good pilot.
Yeah.
And, but I don't think that I would probably watch that again. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what's telling is that 2 weeks ago I watched these pilots, and I haven't watched successive episodes yet.
Right. Uh-huh. Heard this, but there's a lot of other good TV shows out there.
Yeah. You mean a lot of other network dramas that are good, right?
No, that there's a lot of other choices for you. That's why you would go back.
I see. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, then, yes, I did hear that. I did know that. That's why I haven't watched a network drama in a long time. Mm. It's a little bit weird. You know, I think the last broadcast network drama, it was probably like The Flash. That's probably the last one that I watched.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. All right. We got some letters, but first I should probably read an ad.
Woohoo.
And then we'll dive into the letters now that I've admitted that I watched two network TV shows, which is weird. This episode of TV Talk Machine brought to you by ExpressVPN. We've talked about this before. You know, there's people out there who are watching you, and they might be watching you to steal your data. There are also, they may be watching you because they want to sell ads to you or sell your identity and your details to other people who aggregate it all. And then they do creepy ad sales, or, you know, big companies see what you're looking at and see what you're browsing and they market to you. And it's not great. And, you know, you can't control how big corporations mishandle your data or handle it badly, but you can take steps to protect yourself where you can. And that includes the data that flows from your devices to the internet, so that they're not spied on weak, unencrypted Wi-Fi networks, and so that your IP address isn't marked and tagged and followed. When I go out and I'm at the cafe, I will tap a button on my iPad and I'm on ExpressVPN. One click, lightning fast, costs less than $7 a month, and I get to be safe and secure. If I'm traveling, I want to get back home to where I have a legal right to stream video, even though I'm somewhere right. else. I can do mm-hmm. that. Just flip what country I'm in. It's great. They don't need to know. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN provider by TechRadar, CNET, The Verge, and others. Go right now to expressvpn.com/TVTM and arm yourself with an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. You can support this show and protect yourself by going to expressvpn.com/TVTM for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Thank you to ExpressVPN for supporting
absolutely
the TV Talk Machine.
Yes, thank you for that.
Would you like to hear some letters?
I would. What do people have to say?
This is what Patrick in the 802 has to say. He says, okay. Well, one of our intrepid TV Talk Machine hosts, Columbo the Other, with the news that all episodes of Columbo are now streaming for free on IMDb TV. Seriously, though, what's with seemingly every app or website with the slightest entertainment focus offering free streaming of old TV shows and movies? What's the business model? I can't imagine it's driving traffic to the sites, at least until someone starts streaming Banachek. I'm wondering what it all means, Patrick, in the 802. IMDb is owned by Amazon. It's just, I think this is an Amazon play to get more of your data, to get people to IMDb. I don't know. But it is weird, right? Like when you hear about a show and it's streaming on some random website somewhere instead of like a service.
Uh-huh. Then you're like, why is that? Why? It's like, I always feel like people are like, I need to be in content.
Yeah. Do I want to be in a web page when I'm watching TV?
Content. Pivot to content. But a nice Banachek shout out.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
And if you want to Columbo us, just go to IMDb, apparently. Micah in the 425 wrote in to say, a thought experiment inspired by your disgusting of the... You're disgusting. Wow. That was a slip.
Are we going to Australia already,
yeah,
I thought?
We are. Mm-hmm. Your discussion of the new fall network shows. Suppose a broadcast network CEO foolishly decided to vacation in Australia. While there, a poisonous snake bites him. He jumps back and stumbles into a kangaroo and a chicken. The kangaroo and the chicken viciously kick and peck him toward a tree, whereupon a drop bear falls on him and kills him. After a series of improbable wacky hijinks, you suddenly find yourself hired by the network to replace the CEO. You're given absolute power to do whatever you want there. What changes do you make so that non-senior citizens actually get interested in their new shows again while still keeping the stockholders happy? Tim, do you have a plan to save network television?
I do not. If you can't save it, there's like no way.
Negotiate a golden parachute.
Yes. I am so incredibly incompetent. Well, first of all, since I have all the power that he just said, I restructure my package so that I have the golden parachute. And then I just don't show up for work.
I have an answer for CBS. I'm going to take this. Like, I've got Les Moonves' job that he vacated, which is now another guy's job. But anyway, if I get that, what I do is I structure it so that I can sell all of the entertainment assets that are not the broadcast network. I do a Fox, basically. I split it in two and sell off the studio and the intellectual property to Apple, let's say, or something like that, and do some time there running that for a contract mandated amount of time, and then I take the money. But that would be a thing that I would do. Is I think Fox, as it's structured now, is kind of intelligently structured, as weird as it is. And they're like, you know what? There are two businesses here that are totally different now, and they're diverging. And broadcast TV is, you know, let's just set it up over here and it'll be its own thing. But basically I'm with you. Like, I don't think there's anything to be done. This is like, you're the CEO of the newspaper. How do you get everybody to read the newspaper again? It's like, wow, well, maybe not. Like, right. You know, you build up the website and try your best, but that's a tough call because it's kind of already changed. The world's already different. I don't think absolute power is going to solve anything.
Yeah, you can't turn that dinosaur ship around, my friend.
No, look at that. It's back. The dinosaur ship is back.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is from Michael Taylor, our friend high on the Inverness Ridge.
Yes, juicer.
Juicer. A few thoughts on the recently concluded Ken Burns country music doc. Unlike Tim, I didn't find much I hankered to fast forward through, although I agree a lot was missed or addressed with a glancing touch, especially toward the end. Could easily have included another 2-hour episode or more to sufficiently cover the subject. What surprised me was the all-encompassing scope of country music. As a kid listening on the radio, I never considered the Everly Brothers or Roy Orbison to be country music, nor did Brenda Lee's soul radio hit I'm Sorry place her in the country genre in my young mind. As for Ray Charles singing country songs, who knew? Maybe everybody but me, I suppose, but there was much I didn't know or hadn't properly considered about country music, and this documentary opened my eyes. As for binging, the slow binge is as close as I'll ever come to true binge watching. Sure, I've occasionally watched two episodes of Veep or Catastrophe back-to-back, half-hour shows. We'll sometimes watch an episode of a one-hour drama two or three nights in a row. That's the slow binge. But yeah. No way will I sit through two consecutive episodes of Mindhunter, Jack Ryan, or any other one-hour show. Granted, the mass consumption ethos of America has always been more is better, but sometimes less really is more, and enough is always enough, or as Tim would say, tight and bright.
Tight and bright.
Mm-hmm. That is, to each his or her own, what works for me won't work for others, which is as it should be. However, I did binge listen to three TV Talk Machine episodes this morning from High on the Inverness Ridge, Michael Taylor.
He's been forever damaged now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's don't. Yep. Oh, what are you doing? You can't
what
binge the TVTM.
That's like, I could never do that. Never.
Brutal.
Man, wow.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's like Raising Dion.
oh, callback.
No.
People may remember Raising Dion from last week's episode.
Or not.
Or not. Okay, last one. This is from Dean, our traveling man. And he just says, this is a theme for this week. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking after The Good Place ends, Bob's Burgers will be the last network show I'll watch.
Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Which is the, mm-hmm. the paired show for The Good Place. You put them together, mm-hmm. and you've got one Michael Schur show that runs for, fall and spring. But yeah, yep. It's pretty meager, pretty limited.
I think those are the ones. Those are like, I'm down to like those three. Yeah.
My TiVo is a lonely place right now.
Yeah.
Not a lot on there.
Yeah, I get that for sure.
All right. Well, that's it. We're done. We did it. Another episode is in the can, but we're going to need more letters for next week because the can is empty, folks. So email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You could send us a call with your voice or just text. That's fine too. And you could tweet at us at TVTM. I'll read those too. I'll read tweets.
Those work. Yeah.
That's fine. But that's it. Tim, I think we did it. I think we should pat ourselves on the back for executing another episode.
Did it.
Woo. And until next time, who watches The Watchmen? And also, I should say,
goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.